It's time for Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 3 years has shared with us her decades' research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative and judicial processes in America. And now, here's Mae.
Good afternoon. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California, Dialogue Conspiracy number 213, September 8th, 1975. Last week we didn't have the number down in case you're keeping record. Cassettes or tapes make a memo on the outside of the tape because that part was cut off at the time of the introduction. The three items I wanted to talk about at length in the news today are the assassination attempt. One is the assassination attempt of Gerald Ford in Sacramento, California. The other one is the information of the destruction of FBI reports of James Hostie in Dallas, Texas, that he was in contact with Lee Harvey Oswald 5 months before the assassination, and of course the orders of Judge Bernard Nadel from New York, who has ordered Howard Hughes to appear in court in Manhattan, New York, September 17, 1930 a.m., or to be declared legally dead. I decided to narrow the program to the episode in Sacramento and just briefly mention that the Hughes story is one that I'm very close to. I'll be following it at length next week, hopefully doing an entire show on that, because the article I did with Stephanie Caruana for Playgirl in December 74 alleged that Howard Hughes was buried April 18, 1971 by Aristotle Onassis. So you can imagine how I will be sitting here for 2 weeks waiting very anxiously to see the details. The judges ordered that Hughes be required to leave a set of his fingerprints on file with the court in comparison with the U.S. government fingerprint files. If he's declared legally dead and the empire, Hughes' empire, is broken up and there is no Hughes living at the Hotel Xanadu and the Grand Bahamas, then a lot of the secret funding of candidates, the money behind people like, for example, Ronald Reagan, congressmen, various government officials, may be siphoned off and the empire has to be broken up. It would be a very big story if Hughes is declared legally dead. So we have 2 weeks to wait, but it was a courageous decision in a world where most judges are siding along with the conspirators and the assassination experts. This particular judge has ordered that Hughes be required to appear in Manhattan on September 17th at 9:30 a.m. This gentleman, Howard Hughes, has not been seen in 20 years. All of the photographs of him have been bought up, and you can't see pictures of him. There's none existing in the last years. And his physical presence, as far as my research tells me, was that he did not exist personally among his friends or anybody else since 1957, and that he was buried in Greece April 18, 1971, and this was the triggering of the Howard Hughes hoax, the Clifford Irving hoax. So we have until September 17th to see about that. There's an article in the paper this morning on new efforts to go into the John Kennedy assassination by the Church Committee. Richard Schweiker from Pennsylvania is asking the Senate Intelligence Committee to take a new look at the assassination of President John Kennedy. I just about gave up on that committee. I've been corresponding with Richard Schweiker. He claims that there are new developments which have caused him to question the John Kennedy assassination. He has an article in the U.S. News and World Report, and he says that their committee should go into this because there's evidence that Oswald, among other things, was stationed at a base where the CIA had special agents and were trained. Now, that's the area of the book that I was wanting to write all summer, that I'm going to concentrate on in the next few months to get out, that I believe Oswald was instrumental in downing the U-2 flight, breaking up the peace conference of President Eisenhower and Khrushchev, and that his training to down radar came from the Itsugi Air Base in Japan and also in the Philippines. And a member of the Senate now, Richard Schweiker, has said that, among other things, Jack Ruby was working with the FBI as an informer. Oswald was working with the FBI as an informer. And he brings in the subject of Oswald being in Japan at a base where the CIA special agents were trained. And the training was the U-2 flight, So the church committee cannot be thrown over, washed up, and that's terribly exciting to believe that maybe they will, after all, open up in their intelligence investigation what Oswald was doing at the Itsugi Air Base in Japan. Another bombshell that came out in the news this week, I'm mentioning before we go into the episode of Gerald Ford in Sacramento, is the leak that a mystery topic is coming up for the CIA probers, again, the Senate committee, Frank Church's committee. He has announced this week that there will be public hearing September the 16th. That's just a day before Howard Hughes is supposed to appear. The quote, direct quotation is, the subject will open up a whole series of new questions. It is a very important subject that has not yet come to life. The bombshell, there's a bombshell that you're going to get if it isn't leaked before the church committee. Now, as a researcher, I can only say what hasn't been opened up, what will a bombshell be? It could be the murder of Mary Jo Kopechne, who was a boiler room girl who worked for Senator George Smathers and who was murdered in order to keep Ted Kennedy from running in 1972. It could be the attempted murder of George Wallace and the links of Arthur Bremer to the CIA and Charles Colson and E. Howard Hunt and Richard Nixon. The bombshell could be the links of Bernard Barker and E. Howard Hunt to the riots in Chicago in 1968 that have not been properly exposed by Washington, D.C. The bombshell could be the use of behavior modification and hypnotism behind the Robert Kennedy and John Kennedy assassination. Involving a woman in the polka dot dress, all this information was given to the Senator Church Committee as well as information on the second gun. You do remember that James McCord, with his lawyer Bernard Fensterwald, said at the Senate hearings, you can read it in Volume 1, page 322, we are going after the president. And he didn't say who the president was going to be. In the White House tapes, March 21st, 1973, where Richard Nixon and John Dean and Robert Haldeman were talking, they were wondering how to stop James McCord from burning the trees in the forest and going after the president. And Dean said, there are two routes. One is to figure how to cut our losses and minimize the human impact. He went on to say, I can give them a show. We can sell them something just like we sell Wheaties. And Nixon said, the problem here is that you have these minefields down the road. The most difficult problem are the guys who are going to jail. I'm bringing these quotations back because you're going to get bombshells for the next 10 years. But the White House tapes tells you that Richard Nixon knows that you couldn't wash away these crimes like Wheaties, even though John Dean was trying to do it. And E. Howard Hunt also testified that he did many highly illegal conspiracies engaged in, along with other defendants of the Watergate, that were as yet undisclosed crimes. November 29, 1977, Howard Baker said Watergate is only the tip of the iceberg. The Americans have only seen the tip of that iceberg, as distasteful as it is to me. It is entirely possible that Watergate will not be over anytime soon. And on May the 5th, Newsweek, 1973, says there is still worse. You aren't going to believe half of it. John Dean said the whole thing is still coming out inch by inch with a mile to go. It may be impossible to travel the full mile. The eternal hope prevails that somehow they wouldn't have to travel that full mile. And as I say, James McCord had warned that every tree in the forest will fall, and E. Howard Hunt threatened to tell all the seamy things he did for the White House. In 1973, U.S. News World Report says, can America stand another shock? And Frank Sturgis said in March 73, some people believe that when the full story of the plumbers finally emerges, it may prove even more bizarre than anything so far alleged. And Gerald Ford said in March 74, I don't think the country can stand any more bombshells. William Saxby said in June 73, the country can't stand any more shocks. William Ruckelhaus, acting head of the FBI, says there is information that I'm aware of that hasn't become revealed to the public. There are other surprises in this scandal. Representative John Conyers said in 74, the worst is yet to come. And Leon Jaworski said in 74, there are matters the public has never heard about. Now, this is a little warning, a little inkling, that the CIA mystery topic, whatever it is, could be the planned riots and the killing of congressmen or the plan to kill Nixon down in Miami earlier in San Diego. It could have to do with Chappaquiddick. It could do with the Wallace shooting. There's any number of major crimes. The murder of Dorothy Hunt's plane, the plane crash. There's a whole list of crimes that involve murder, even the murder of J. Edgar Hoover. And what's going to come up, this mystery topic, I don't know, but they're going to get to the bloody part soon, because every person involved in what we call the Watergate affair, which really goes back many, many years, is whispering something. So the church committee tells you when they go public on television, you have a good show coming September the 16th, so get ready. And September 17th, E. Howard Hughes is supposed to be in Manhattan, and we shall see if he arrives in New York City or is declared legally dead, which is an insane situation. A man who's getting millions of dollars of government contracts to be declared legally dead with all of these charades going on. And every one of these charades that I have mentioned goes back to the Hughes corporations or people working for Hughes or Hughes money or secret money that went to the desk of Rosemary Wood, to John Caulfield, Tony Lasowitz. It all links and interlinks. Some of the new stations that have picked up Dialogue Conspiracy in the recent months, such as at Antioch College in Ohio or San Luis Obispo, sometimes feel that I'm racing too fast on this show, and maybe I should slow down with a little more explanation of the past. But forgive me if the next few weeks we continue at this same fast pace. In 1 week, I will go back and give sort of an umbrella program of how I have done my research, how I came to my conclusions. And if you have a little patience and follow it each week, we will get to one of those sessions where we rap about it and answer a few questions that you're writing to me in the mail. Now we're going to talk about the Sacramento incident of Gerald Ford and little Squeaky. I don't think she's so innocent, little Squeaky. And what happened up there in Sacramento? Because I'm the only researcher in the United States into political assassinations and conspiracies who can make a direct link from Lee Harvey Oswald to the kidnapping and death of Howard Hughes or the involvement of Charles Manson into the major assassinations, I was besieged by calls this week. There were calls from Toronto, Canada. The radio station is going to start taking Dialogue Conspiracy from New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia, Chicago, Sacramento, Salt Lake City, all over the country. As a matter of fact, when these major events happen, I'm going to have to get off the phone and just write articles on them, because the phone was ringing like mad for 3 days. The first headlines up north, of course, were the Los Angeles Times. She looked like a gypsy in red. Lynette was clothed like a gypsy. This reminded me of Adolf Hitler before he killed the Jews and went after the Catholics. The gypsies were the first to go. Lynette Squeaky Fromm was wearing a red turban, a red purse, a red dress. She calls herself a red nun of a sort and was very conspicuous in the crowd. The second point I want to make is that as soon as she was apprehended and the gun was taken from her hand, she yelled, "It didn't go off. It didn't go off. Can you believe it? It didn't go off." And then she asked the men, "Why are you protecting him? He isn't a public servant. He's not working for the people, and you're not getting what you paid for." Lynette made these statements, which wouldn't make much sense, considering that the gun really wasn't prepared to go off. The bullets weren't even in a place to go off, except for a very small article, which I read. Also, this is a UPI story that came out, that there was a backup team to this particular assassination that was apprehended in Santa Barbara. Now, Santa Barbara has been a place where weapons have been shipped across to England for an international terrorism strike, which came from the right wing that was supposed to look like the left. But the UPI story, dated September the 7th, 1975, claims that two men were held on a suspicion of burglary, and they were charged a week ago with threatening to kill Gerald Ford in Sacramento. Their complaints filed now against a Gary Desure, D-E-S-U-R-E, age 31, who recently was in a Montana state hospital. And again, we have to know what kind of a mental programming or situation this was. And a Preston Mayo, age 24, the bail is $100,000 each. Now, when they were arrested on a burglary charge, they told officials that they were on their way to Sacramento to kill Gerald Ford. They said they'd been in contact with Patty Hearst. They'd killed another man in Tennessee. They had flown from Hollywood Burbank Airport to Santa Barbara, and there was information from the local police enough to search them, and the Secret Service agents found in their car notes with explicit designs of an assassination plan. The agents there found a doctor's prescription pad also with notes indicating that they were making a trip to San Francisco to get some dynamite and a rifle. And the rifle was to have a sniper scope, and they needed a plan of the Sacramento sewer system. Does this sound familiar with the sewer system plan Penn Jones Jr. alleges in Dallas, Texas, that the sewers were used as an escape for gunmen at Dealey Plaza? These men indicated that the sewer system was needed for both their escape and to put dynamite under particular buildings where Gerald Ford was to appear. Now, I wonder if Squeaky was told to be out in front with a gun, and I'll go into what I believe was the programming of this particular woman, and that there would be a backup team. There was an incident where the Los Angeles Police Department, through the criminal conspiracy section, knew that Jonathan Jackson would be up in Marin County when Judge Haley was shot, and Jonathan was left alone, and the backup team didn't show up. And this very conspicuous woman with the red turban, the red dress, the red purse was standing 2 feet from Gerald Ford, the President of the United States, but arrested in Santa Barbara on the 29th with these men. And they had wanted the sewer system and they wanted a sniper scope, and they were on their way to Sacramento. And maybe she believed that they would be the backup, just as Sirhan had bullets going off in the Ambassador Hotel, but did not kill Robert Kennedy. Robert Kennedy was killed from behind. Her statement seems to indicate that she expected something to happen, like it didn't go off. Could you believe it? It didn't go off. And there was Lynette standing there alone, and the backup team never arrived. But there hasn't been much in the press to talk about these men who wanted this rifle with a scope, who had obtained or wanted the sewer system, or whether or not they had people in common. And this very small, inconspicuous article was only in one newspaper, which would indicate her surprise on why it didn't get off. Now, Lynette Squeaky Fromm was the first female member of the Manson family. And I compare her to Nancy Ling Perry, who had flown to Washington, who had worked with military agents and the CIA, who got the SLA form. And being as she was the first member of the Manson family and was never held on any of the charges or crimes, she could very easily have been their agent provocateur and under control all of these years since Charlie Manson got out of prison. Now, just briefly, I'm going to give a quick rundown on Charlie Manson, on the conspiratorial aspects of it, because many of you are familiar with my work and my lectures have heard me talk about Charles Manson. He was a convict who was in prison. He had a talent with music, a love of women. He happened to be a racist, pro-Nazi, hates blacks, wanted a race war. But he was a natural musician with a certain amount of talent and a know-how with the chicks. He was put into a cell with Alvin Creepy Karpus, who was J. Edgar Hoover's great claim to fame. And Creepy Karpus taught him the Mason hand signs, which he was giving the judge at the time of his trial. And as soon as Manson was out of jail shortly after, Karpus was also paroled and wrote a book about his experiences. Manson was given $45 and went directly to Sacramento, California, and Squeaky Fromm was the first chick that he met up with. He acquired a large van, a lot of women, a stereo set, and he traveled around the Southwest. He went to California, Texas, New Mexico, Alabama, New Orleans, allegedly in a black bus with a bunch of freaky people. But at the time of his trial, or in articles about Manson, you never once heard people who saw them on their travels, who recognized them in these states, who recognized these people, and they happened to be housing at particular CIA safe houses for about 18 months while they did their traveling. Squeaky happens, she's the daughter of a engineer, aerospace engineer, with a good touch with law. She understands law books. And as I say, she's always been out of trouble, and she was his first contact. She set up the organization for them. She was the maitre d', to speak, of the Spahn Ranch, which I claim was a CIA safe house for Manson and his gang. They stayed out there in North Hollywood in the valley, thanks to Squeaky's arrangements at the Spahn Ranch. It backed up to the Krupp Ranch, owned by the German industrialists, incidentally, and this is where the Manson family lived. The sheriff's department had constant complaints about the man. Some family neighbors complained there were machine guns, weapons, drugs, girls underage. And the orders by the sheriff's department, Peter Pitches in Los Angeles, was don't touch Manson. Nobody could arrest them, nobody could bother them or check them out. And a sheriff who worked for them at the time and resigned after Manson was arrested and let go told me that every complaint about the family had to be turned face down so the other sheriffs couldn't see it. And it was his opinion that Manson was being groomed to kill Black Panthers, but actually he's being let loose to slaughter white America. That Sharon Tate family, she and her child, she was pregnant, persons in that house, and the next night, the LaBiancas. Charles Watson did all the murders. Manson never was in those homes at the night of the killings. Watson was brought from Texas. He was given immunity of a sort. He had a separate trial. And we never called them the Watson murders, but they were the Watson murders and not the Manson murders. After the bodies were killed in Sharon Tate's home, they were all rearranged when the family left, and that's one of the big mysteries of who tied the bodies up with the ropes and sheets to make it look like witchcraft, the Helter Skelter thing to implicate the Beatles, named after a song the Beatles wrote. The Helter Skelter was written in blood on the icebox of the LaBiancas. Now, the sheriff, Preston Guillory, was part of the arrest of the Manson family at the Spahn Ranch. They were all taken to the sheriff's department, and they were all released, the entire family. Even though they had weapons, drugs, and girls underage, and Manson was on parole, they were released from the sheriff's department after the seven persons were killed in Los Angeles and went out to the Barker Ranch, which I maintained was another CIA-safe ranch where they were living and not meant to be arrested, except that they were caught for stealing parts of a dune buggy, and one of the girls squealed in jail, and that brought their subsequent arrest. I met somebody in the course that I was teaching in college last year whose roommate attended Spahn Ranch quite frequently, who's in military intelligence, who was involved the night that Sharon Tate and the others were murdered in Split Town, and is still working in military intelligence in Colorado. Now, it's interesting that Lynette Squeaky Fromm, who's linked to the Manson killing, now the killings, and now the Ford assassination attempt, was in contact with police, with police department, had been to the Associated Press recently, and never was held on a crime. Agent provocateurs do a lot of dirty work for the police department, and the police department has them on a leash. They don't arrest them for drugs or other crimes or burglaries because they use them later and they have a control. Lewis Tackwood talks about it in his book, The Glass House Tapes. He was a provocateur for the LAPD, Los Angeles Police Department, for 9 years. Donald DeFries was another agent of the FBI and the Los Angeles Police Department, and when he wanted to come clean and tell the judge about what was happening, they decided to send him to Vacaville and program him to form the SLA as their leader and use him for other purposes. Now, Squeaky was very much a part of the original Manson family. She was the first to contact him when he got out of jail. She was never held or accused of any murders at the home of Sharon Tate or LaBianca. She was immune from these arrests. She was in charge of the Spahn Ranch, the safe house, but was kept out of the trials. Later, she was accused of giving LSD and a hamburger to one of the prospective witnesses at the trial, but all these charges were dropped and reduced. She had spent about 90 days in jail, and all these charges were reduced. Later, she was held in a Stockton jail waiting trial for a murder in November 1972. A James Willett was decapitated. His head was cut off while he was still in his Marine uniform. His wife's body was found near the house where Lynette Fromm Squeaky lived, where two other members of the Manson family were living. Both of the men had been ex-convicts that were involved in this affair, members of the Aryan Brotherhood, neo-Nazis, and she was held originally on these murder charges, and those charges were dropped. She was arrested during the Manson trial for loitering and endangering public safety, for failing to identify herself, and she was given a little slap on the wrist by the police, and they let her out, and those charges were dropped. She was arrested for connection and aiding and escaping a family member who was jailed for robbery, and those charges were dropped. You will see Evel Younger, according to the news today, said they had a long list of evidence on this particular woman, And as I'm showing you, there was reason to know who she was and to have her apprehended, but all these charges were dropped. And this is a pattern typical of an agent provocateur for the police department. She was later jailed for contempt of court because she refused to take the witness stand and answer questions in a court proceeding having to do with the murder of Gary Hinneman and Donald Shea, and those charges were dropped. She spent 3 months in jail as a suspect in the Stockton murder, as I say, and was charged then for robbery in Granada Hills, and those charges were cleared, and Lynette Squeaky's charges were dropped. In other words, you can see the pattern here. This girl who came from a well-to-do family, father aeronautical engineer, working for the government, I imagine, if he's an aeronautical engineer, attended a short while El Camino College. Her background and her pattern is similar to Nancy Ling Perry. She helped set up the family. She was the first chick Manson was to meet. She escaped all arrests, and here she is 2 feet from Gerald Ford in Sacramento. 2 months before Gerald Ford came out to Sacramento, she went to the Associated Press, which is an interesting thing for one of the Manson girls to do, and makes allegations about Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford taking over, which sound antagonistic, but again, the SLA syndrome and the weatherman is go to the news media, the Associated Press, the airwaves, the stations, and get maximum publicity, so this scare and terror or this assassination syndrome now continues to take full pages of the newspaper. Now, just prior to the shooting, she didn't shoot, prior to holding her gun in the air in Sacramento, she was observed by witnesses on the ground and looking up at the Secret Service at the roof of the Senator Hotel from where Gerald Ford was to exit. And this reminds me of a witness who is now being deprogrammed who says that he was at Dealey Plaza at the time that John Kennedy was killed and participated in the killing, and he claims that he looked over to the Texas School Book Depository from the Daltex building where a mirror was flashed to his eyes that was a signal to shoot. And I wonder if her looking up at the Senator Hotel, she was observed looking at the Secret Service up at the roof at the Senator Hotel, if she was getting the same signal. Because in the trial of Sirhan at the Ambassador Hotel and through witnesses later that were interviewed, Sirhan looked into a mirror, which allegedly triggered off his shooting at random in the Ambassador Hotel while a backup killed Robert Kennedy from behind. So that a mirror, a hand mirror, was used in the Ambassador Hotel with Sirhan. A street mirror was used at Dealey Plaza when John Kennedy was killed, and witnesses on the street said that they saw her looking at the rooftop, up at the rooftop where the Secret Service was standing at the Senator Hotel. And the pattern here seems to be very close to the person that she wanted to shoot or would have shot, and yet they had no bullets there ready to shoot at all, just as Sirhan did not get bullets into Robert Kennedy. Now, how did she know that the President of the United States would not be driven from the Senator Hotel to the Capitol? How did she know he would be crossing the street by foot directly in her path, that she should be there waiting for them? In all of these conspiracies, we go to the question of the secrecy of the weapon. The news media, the investigative agencies, the police are very quick to give you the past history, but they never tell you the present history of the weapons. They all of a sudden turn blank, and then that's blocked out for you. They'll tell you that this .45 caliber gun is 60 years old, that it was manufactured by Colt in 1911, that the Army used it for a little time, that it was sold as an Army surplus in 1913, that the Army determined it wasn't stolen for its supplies. But the U.S. Attorney, D. Wayne Keyes, has identified the owner of the weapon that Squeaky was holding, Annette Fromm. The news media will not tell you the owner's name, and the owner has told the DA that he was aware that Ms. Fromm had the weapon in her possession at that time. Now, if he knows her very well, or well enough to give her a weapon, after all the other list of charges that I've read off, and after the Secret Service said they were aware of her there, or the police were aware of her there, and he supplies her weapon, his name is again blocked out like people that came from the back east who supplied the weapons for the SLA. The source of the weapons, there's dead silence. The history of them, That's very easy to get to. This was a big gun. It weighed 2.5 pounds. Miss Frome at the time appeared shocked when the gun didn't go off, but at the same time she had neglected to pull back the barrel mechanism or to load the firing chamber. The gun was not cocked. There were no bullets in the firing chamber, and that's a very funny way to assassinate somebody. But if the backup team hadn't been arrested in Santa Barbara, had they killed Gerald Ford in Sacramento, would we know whether or not her gun had gone off or not? This gun happened to be not cocked. There were no bullets in the firing chamber, but somebody supplied her that gun. The owner is known to the DA, the U.S. attorney, and he knew she had it in her possession, but we don't get that kind of information. Now, the law enforcement has admitted that they knew that she was living in the Sacramento area. She not only lived in the Sacramento area, but she was in very close contact with Nazis and members of the Nazi Party who had recently gotten out of prison from the Aryan Brotherhood. She was frequently seen talking to policemen in Sacramento. 5 minutes before Gerald Ford came out of the Senator Hotel, she asked a policeman, "Is this where the president is coming through?" Just 5 minutes before Robert Kennedy walked through the pantry to where he was to be killed by Sirhan Sirhan, the same question was asked by Sirhan, "Is this where the senator is coming?" Now, those parallels are very interesting. And she had gone to the Associated Press in July 75 to deliver her anti-Nixon Ford message. She was visible in the community, and the red turban, the red dress, the purse, the red hair, the same person was known to the law enforcement. She is known to the press, but the same pattern of asking, "Is this where he's coming through?" and her looking to roof, the same parallels that seem to go through the other assassination syndromes. Was Lynette Frome drugged or controlled? All I know is so far is that the description of her by people on the streets is identical to the description of the people at the house when the SLA was murdered, to the expression of Sirhan Sirhan when he was arrested. Lee Harvey Oswald was taken by surprise and was very arrogant. But I asked the question, was she drugged or controlled? And what mental hospital did the other alleged assassin who was going to Sacramento, who wanted to know about the sewer system, who had the rifle, what was he doing in a mental hospital and who was treating him? Now, the first accounts of Lynette said that she was always on, her friend said she was always on Reds and port wine. This was the identical story of Nancy Ling Perry. Always on Reds, and the SLA were drinking their red wine. Now, witnesses to the assassination attempt, was an assassination, made the following remarks. These come from the Los Angeles Times. One person says her eyes were glassy. Another says she didn't look normal. So another person said her eyes just sort of had this glaze. Another interview said she looked like a person in deep shock and totally oblivious to what was going on. Another said they slammed her up against a tree and frisked her, and her eyes were in a glaze. Again, the same syndrome, the same pattern, and again, she talked about death, and this fits in with the programming. The documentation that's before Senator Church's committee about the programming of Sirhan Sirhan and the assassin, I'm not free to mention his name on the air until it goes, it's announced by the Church committee, but I have it. The man at the Dow Tech building that says that he was programmed to kill or shoot John Kennedy from the back of the head, they were programmed to kill themselves, and something went wrong. Persons that have worked with Sirhan Sirhan said that the reason he was trying to get the gun back was to shoot himself. Lawrence Kwong, the robot up in San Francisco that walked up to KGO, went out from the building after killing Ben Munson and went down the street and killed himself. There was another article that said that Squeaky talked with her roommate, and her roommate is quoted as saying she talked a lot about death. She asked me if I was afraid of dying, and a lot of times she didn't make sense. Now, this taking Reds, drinking port wine, talking about death, looking up at the building, knowing where the president was going to pass, being 2 feet from him, and the backup not wondering why he wasn't killed, and yet her not having the weapon that would kill him puts her in the identical patsy position where the president of the United States could be killed and the Manson family could be blamed. And one more parallel to the programming is this recent talk about her death. Now, in the past political assassinations, we had the famous Oswald diary that Oswald didn't write, the Sirhan diary that Sirhan didn't write, the Arthur Bremer diary, which is not the style of Arthur Bremer, and he never kept a diary before, and he's strangely silent on it. The SLA writing on the walls on the Golden Gate apartment seems very much like agent provocateurs egging on the police and calling them pigs. What kind of a diary or document came in this syndrome? Because we have so many parallels to the past assassination attempts. Well, for one thing, a letter was mailed August 23, 1975, to the Criminal Justice Department in Sacramento. And we haven't yet heard, it's too soon to find out because all this has just happened in the last few days. But a letter typewritten by C. Manson, not handwritten, so we don't know if he wrote it. We'll have to hear from Charlie Manson. The postmark is Tamal, which is San Quentin Prison. And it's a letter to the Justice Committee, which this is, quotes, this is all the letter says. I've told you people over and over, I can release thoughts that will destroy you. The working people, I can understand, but you lawyers, drunk with blood of the dummies like me, are in trouble. You best be thinking on how to save your lives, because the other justice is going to catch up with you. Now, that isn't a threat against Gerald Ford, but the prosecutor of Charles Manson, Mr. Bugliosi, is coming out, and one of the prosecutors, and claiming Manson was behind this shooting, and that the girls don't act on their own, and with no evidence at all that Charlie Manson planned this. Bugliosi came out this week. He is seeking the appointment as a Los Angeles County District Attorney now that Ed Bush is dead. He prosecuted the Manson case, and this is a quotation of Bugliosi's. The past murders were designed to shock the world, and nothing would have shocked the world more than the assassination of President Ford. That is Bugliosi passing the same garbage propaganda, pure propaganda. Charlie Manson has 54 reasons or appeals to get out of prison, being as he didn't kill any of the seven people that he was charged with murdering. And yet the same person that prosecuted him the first time is trying to link him to this assassination attempt. So is it possible that this anonymous letter was sent just a week before in order to link it to what was going to happen in Sacramento? Now, who was the policeman that Squeaky talked to? She asked a policeman, will he be passing here soon? Will the president be passing soon? I think it's important for people listening to KZAP in Sacramento who hear the show to find out who the policeman was and get an interview with him. Is he a member of the police department? Did he have a borrowed uniform like the policeman at Dealey Plaza? Was he a backup from Army Intelligence like we had in Dealey Plaza or in the Ambassador Hotel? Was he an actual member, long member, of the Sacramento Police Department who spoke to her, who told, you know, the president will be here in 5 minutes? Who was this policeman? And let's find out how long he's been on the police force, or was he from military intelligence and a backup to the situation. Now, I did say at the Boston conference in January 30th, 1974, that we have a power struggle going on in Washington, D.C., and that one of three things is going to happen. I believe that Gerald Ford would be murdered, and Rockefeller and Reagan would fight it out for the presidency of the United States, or if Ford took Rockefeller as vice president, one would have to be assassinated to make way for Ronald Reagan. And if Ronald Reagan is selected as vice president in 1976, Gerald Ford would get the JFK treatment to make way for Reagan. Now, these are outrageous statements to make, but I believe that the power struggle will use the Minutemen, the Nazi Party, the white Aryans to cover this power struggle to conceal it from where it's really coming from. I base this wild charge on allegations of who is behind Ronald Reagan's campaign. For one thing, all of the Reagan people are lining up with Gerald Ford. All the top people of his team in California and around the country are lining up with Gerald Ford, and yet he hasn't announced yet whether he's going to run for president. So why would his team be switching at this date if he hasn't even announced in the primaries that he's going to run for president, unless they intended to be into power by the time he got into the White House? Otherwise, they would stay with him until his intentions are known. I've never heard of anything so unprecedented as to run to the other side before he even announces his intentions. I might read you a few pages from a book by Penn Jones Jr., who has written 4 books on the Kennedy assassination. He's a noted researcher and author of books. He's a retired general for the National Guard. And in Volume 4 of Forgive My Grief, he describes the Defense Industry Security Command, the secret police agency of the United States ammunition makers, who is funding Lloyd Benston from Texas and also Ronald Reagan. He goes in to say, this is from the book Forgive My Grief, the funneling of funds to Lloyd Benston from various organizations is revealed from CIA conduits through the mid-60s, and now the secret security organization DISC, that's the Defense Industry Security Command, that supervises and controls huge corporations that manufacture weapons of violent death, work with the CIA and the FBI, mafia, and the gambling syndicate. And he goes on to say they fund Lloyd Benston, but DISC also funds and furnishes campaign cash for Ronald Reagan in California this year, among others. Make no mistake, Penn Jones said, DISC and its supervisors are the most powerful and dangerous domestic secret police agency to ever threaten a democratic society. This is from Penn Jones Jr., author of 4 books, Forgive My Grief, Volumes 1, 2, 3, and 4, who's an authority on persons that have been assassinated or murdered close to the assassination of John Kennedy. And he talks about the Defense Industry Security Command, and he says, DISC is furnishing campaign cash for Ronald Reagan in California. Make no mistake, DISC and its supervisors are the most powerful and dangerous domestic police agency ever to threaten a democratic society. On April the 7th, 1970, DISC was first publicly tied to the assassination of President Kennedy, and news bulletins revealed that a suit had been filed to force the archives to open documents suppressed by J. Edgar Hoover that revealed that Oswald was a top agent of DISC, and their command was in Raleigh, North Carolina, and the agent was described as an employee of the Federal Counterintelligence Organization. Now, these organizations can use the Aryan Brotherhood. They can use people like Lynette Fromm Squeaky, who works with the White Aryan Knights. Remember the shooting of Dr. Marcus Foster that set off the SLA came from the Nazis. It was not a left-wing radical terrorist group, but there were Nazis involved in that shooting. The killing of Popeye Jackson, founder of the Prisoners Union, involved the Klan, not left-wing radical groups, and Lynette Fromm works constantly with ex-convicts, White Aryan Knights from San Quentin, and former convicts and racists who want a race war in this country. So DISC could be funding Lynette Fromm. They could be funding the Spahn Ranch, the Barker Ranch, the entire Manson trip. So they could use this chick to get Gerald Ford or use her as a front. And maybe those two men that were arrested in Santa Barbara staved off this assassination attempt this time. But it will take place if these people are funded the way Penn Jones says they are and the way my research backs it up. Then Gerald Ford and Vice President Rockefeller, it's a toss-up which one will go. But I said almost a year ago in Boston, that one of them will be moved away if this secret organization of the United States government continues to have power over our elections. My time is up. I'm 1 minute over. I'll see you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy, and let's find Howard Hughes by next week.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 10 years has been researching the facts behind political assassinations and conspiracies in this country. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KELRB-FM in Carmel, California.